trust God, it's amazing. Life is just a marathon, so pace it. Brush pain, that thing's how you make demons. Life ain't gotta be hard, just keep it basic. Welcome back to For Me Declassified. I'm your host, Chad Jones, and we are here today with our first-time co-host, Mrs. Abigail Carey. Abby, how you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Today, as our guest, is an old friend of ours, old in that he's been here before, not in age. He looks like he's about 29, but...
I wish.
Our Fort Meade Suicide Prevention Coordinator, Mr. Miguel Sierra. How you been doing, man?
Can't complain, Chad. How are you?
Good. You guys have been doing some good work lately.
I appreciate that, man. I appreciate you noticing.
Yeah, of course. It's always a tough topic to talk about, suicide prevention, but it was always never a bad time. But as we get into this month more than any, as we emphasize it, what are we doing this year?
The theme for the year is Stronger Together, Connect to Protect, which has basically been, you know, a variation of the emphasis that we've had in my 3 years here. To not only promote folks' help-seeking behavior, right? So encouraging people to get help when needed, but also an emphasis on what can we do as a community to prevent and address the issue of suicide. And this year, we had three events that in different ways touch on the topic. So the first event we had was Pure Praxis, was a interactive, immersive training that we did.
Very good.
Yeah, they're all right, you know, hopefully we'll bring them back soon. We wanted to showcase how suicide is not a simple one-trick issue. There's a complexity to it a lot of times, right? And in the Pure Praxis event, we addressed a topic from not only a suicide prevention perspective, but we threw in how issues with sexual assault, sexual harassment, environment, drug and alcohol abuse, substance abuse issues can all play a part in it. So it was beautifully done in the way that we connected all three different topics to showcase the complexity of suicide and suicide ideations. The next event that we have this week, actually on Wednesday, 18 September, from 12 to 1 at the Post Auditorium, is bringing in the Washington Tattoo. She's going to showcase using music to cope and deal with stress, right? So now we're shifting a little bit and showcasing how our community can benefit from finding holistic alternative ways to relax and take care of themselves and cope and deal with stressors, right? And music is one of those things that kind of brings everybody together. I've seen the Washington Tattoo perform several times. It took a while and a lot of money to bring him here, but we finally got it done. And I'm really looking forward to our community to experience how playing with drums and banging out drums can help folks overcome stressors, overcome difficult times that can lead to suicide, right? So we're getting way left of the boom here, but it's also a good event.
So Abby, what do you listen to when you need to distress? Bring in music, you're having a rough day or having a rough go of it and just taking advantage of...
We all got our music, right? Abby, what do you listen to?
I listen to a lot of... I'm a huge Taylor Swift fan. So in my stress time, I'm in my Reputation era where I'm just getting angry at people.
I did not take you as a Swiftie. You've been here for 4 months. That should have been on your job application. The intention of that is just to be able to use music.
It's not just going to be the listening to music part because that's easy, right? But also how creating music, right? And this is just a snapshot, right? So for this one, we're going to focus on music, but think about a person creating art, journaling, writing poetry, writing songs, going outside and just, you know, just enjoying life in a way that is intentional, an intentional distressor in ways that, you know, a lot of times, especially in our community, in the Army community, military community, we a lot of times think of, I'm stressed out, I need to go to behavioral health. I'm stressed out, I need to go get help for this. Now, but you can help yourself also, even if it means just taking some drums and just banging on them a little bit and just creating your own music. There's a certain level of satisfaction. I'm very hopeful to, very excited to see the Washington Tattoo come in and showcase that for our community.
And then what was your third one?
But the third event is going to be my staple, right? The staple of the program, which is a panel discussion, suicide prevention table talk, in which we're going to focus on rethinking prevention. For the last event, we're going to bring in a few suicide prevention professionals, a few community and for me leaders to discuss what suicide prevention looks like, the role that leadership plays in it, the role that community members play in it, the roles that we play in preventing suicide from within. And again, so it's more of an accountability check and intentionality setting for us closing out Suicide Prevention Month and moving into the fiscal year. The goal here is to empower the community and the attendees with tools, resources, and that sense of intentionality moving forward that will help them understand what suicide prevention looks like outside of just going to see a doctor or seeing a clinician.
I'm sure people are excited to be able to see the Washington tattoo and being able to learn more about the different ways of suicide prevention. But I kind of wanted to get into a little bit about your background and why you're interested in suicide prevention and what it means to you. Can you give us an overview of your job and the suicide prevention program at Fort Meade?
Okay, yeah, sure. So my job essentially is to support command teams in anything dealing with suicide, right? So suicide prevention, suicide intervention, suicide postvention. God forbid, when a suicide does happen, I support command teams in allocating resources and bringing the team together to support that command team, right? And also reintegration. When a suicide attempt happens, how do we get the soldier or the community member or the civilian employee back to battle rhythm, back to the shop in a way that is productive, compassionate, and conducive to their progress and emotional wellness? But also, you know, provide education to the community, soldiers, civilians, and family members in understanding what suicide prevention actually looks like. I teach classes that are geared towards the entire community, and then I do two classes that are geared towards approaching the conversation from a leadership perspective. So we have an ACSI Tier 1 and Tier 2 class that we teach to leaders. They get more in-depth into the topic, into the subject, so they can approach the subject as leaders. My job is to make sure, you know, that suicides don't happen here. I don't want to call it mission impossible because it's not. We definitely got to get creative into how to approach that so that people don't feel like they're being trained, quote unquote, or being forced to be somewhere, or it's not a check the box or check the block. It's a responsibility that we have to each other as human beings, first and foremost. Well, that's the essence of my job. Go out there and be in spaces like this, which I really appreciate you bringing me back to start debunking a lot of the stigmas that surround suicide prevention.
People think about Fort Meade. We don't have any real combat troops per se. We don't have maybe some of the different audiences that you would maybe tie with service member suicide or suicidal ideations, yet Fort Meade does tend to have, at least historically, a larger number of ideations than other installations and places like that. What do you account that for?
So first of all, let me say this. You said a lot in very few words. So first of all, yeah, we don't have combat troops. We're not the 82nd Airborne or 101st. We're not 25th ID or any of those guys. We're not actually click, click, boom, or shoot them up, bang, bang. But our soldiers that are out here, we have a lot of intel, a lot of cybersecurity soldiers, right, that go out here every day. It's like they're deployed. Every day they go out here and they fight in the battles that, you know, we live in a different world now. Much respect to my friends in the 82nd. I got a lot of them. I'm retired Army, so I got a lot of friends that airborne wings mean a lot to them. But let's be real. The wars right now are being fought behind a computer. The wars right now are being fought in counterintelligence and in collecting data and collecting information, making sure that you do something with that information. And our soldiers are doing that day in and day out. Yeah, they're not necessarily deployed or in combat zones, but they are definitely fighting a fight every day. It's an intense fight. It's an intense environment where it's secretive, it's, you know, secret squirrels. They can't speak on what they go through, what they're experiencing a lot. Those stressors build up.
Does that change at all your tactic or technique to reach them?
I've been here for 3 years now. My learning curve has been great here because prior to arriving to Fort Meade, my experience was with more traditional Army settings, Schofield Barracks as my last duty station, Fort Belvoir, Virginia. They were more openly engaging, extrovert type of soldiers. And our soldiers here, I'm pretty much like, shh, hush, hush, right? So I've definitely had to switch my approach. It's been a beautiful journey, man. I can't lie to you, man. It's been challenging, but also I've learned to appreciate the fact that the Army is not a one-trick pony, right? It's not one way of doing things. I've gained an appreciation for the cyber and intel community that cannot go understated, man. So I'm an athlete. A lot of our soldiers, man, if I try to get them to come out to a basketball game, for example, to do some prevention stuff, it's going to be like, I don't know about that. But if I invite them to a cosplay, you know, or a anime convention, right? Which is not my thing, but it's theirs. The key is to meet them where they are. As long as you meet people where they are, you know, you'll be able to bring them around. And I think I've learned a lot about anime in the last 3 years that I've been here. That says something, you know?
So we're going to delve into that a little bit. But right now, though, if we could, seems like our friend Chuck Yang has a little bit of command information. So we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back with Miguel.
Hello, Chuck Yang here with command information. Join us on Saturday, October 5th. From 8 a.m. to noon for a fun-filled youth fishing rodeo at Berber Lake Recreation Area. Rain or shine, this free event is open to kids ages 3 to 15. Registration starts at 8 a.m. at Berber Cottage, with the competition ending at noon followed by an award ceremony. Age categories include 3 to 6, 7 to 11, and 12 to 15, with prizes for each. For more information, contact the Mead Rod and Gun Club at 202-360-7471. And mark your calendars for October 19th, when Club Mead hosts a family Halloween ball dinner and dance from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. Enjoy a delicious buffet, dancing, craft tables, and more. Tickets are $50 per person and available now through FMWR. Don't miss out on this family-friendly event. Now, back to the conversation.
Welcome back to Fort Meade Declassified. I'm Abigail Carey. And as we were previously talking about, the prevention is a little bit different here than in other places by using unconventional means like anime and cosplay. And as a little bit of an anime nerd myself, what is the coolest cosplay that you've seen?
Well, cosplay... the coolest one is the little girl from Demon Slayer, the sister.
Yes.
She won't speak, but she got a little piece of bamboo or whatever it is in her mouth. She's got, she's powerful, but she don't speak. So one of my good friends, she dressed up as her a couple of years ago. And I thought it was just so cool because I was actually watching it with my kids at the same time. So I don't know if it was the best. It was the coolest one to me, though. Demon Slayer, no, I'll take that back. Demon Slayer used to be my favorite, but now it's Death Note.
That's a classic.
I'm a little older, you know what I'm saying? But Death Note, probably my favorite. What's the one with the giants?
Are you talking about Attack on Titan?
Attack on Titan.
That's also a classic.
It's like 800 episodes, man, but that's great cosplay. And don't ask me no more questions about cosplay.
Well, let's get back into maybe something that's a little bit more of your bread and butter.
There we go. Let's go.
Talking about suicide and prevention, I'm sure that there's a lot of information that people are lacking. But what are some of the primary risk factors? So we talked a little bit about how with service members, it's a lot of things that happen on active duty or things that they've seen, but maybe for everyone, what are some of the primary risk factors?
So that's a great question, actually, because when you're thinking of risk factors, we're thinking things, situations, life happenings that don't necessarily mean the person is suicidal, but if not mitigated and addressed, it could lead to somebody feeling suicidal. Or even if they never feel suicidal, it's impacting the quality of life. So things like life changes, a divorce, PCS to, I don't know, Fort Drum, for example, or Alaska somewhere, you know, health issues, things that come into a person's life that impacts them in general. You can add to that some of the risk factors come from the way people came up. Did they see anger or drinking or doing drugs as coping skills in their environments they came up with? You know, those are also risk factors. In essence, though, anything that can impact a person's life where there's a period of adjustment can be a risk factor. And it's not always the negative things. It can also be a positive thing, like a promotion, getting married, having a baby, a PCS to Hawaii, things like that that are essentially good things also involve a certain level of adjustment to it that can sometimes, not always, but sometimes be risky.
You mentioned all the risk factors. Normally, one risk factor or another ends up popping up when you do analysis of what happened with the ideation or something like that. So if we know these risk factors are there, why isn't it not just easy? Hey, we're going to prevent all suicide. We're going to see something different and we're going to stop it. What is the disconnect?
I think that's it. I think in a word, you just said it, right? When we look at it as, you know, I see a risk factor, I'm going to report it. It's essentially we're passing the buck to somebody else. We're passing the responsibility we have to each other, for each other, to someone else. And usually that looks like, I'm going to say this, right, not to bash leadership at all, but a lot of times in life when we don't know what to do about something, you know, we just look for the answer, right? If a soldier, a service member, a sailor, Marine, airman, or whatever comes to me with an issue and I don't have an immediate answer for it, as a leader that has another 30 million things to do, is the right thing to do is go see behavioral health to help. Mm-hmm. I'm doing my job, so I'm essentially finding the answers for you. But I'm listening to respond in that moment. I'm listening to your problems to respond, to give you a quick answer so I can get back to whatever I have to do. We have to do a better job of listening to understand. Risk factors are not that simple. Risk factors are not cookie cutter. You and I are two federal employees working for me, but you and I can respond to the same situation differently also. Not saying you're divorced, right? Not to get in your business, but you and I could probably respond to a divorce differently. We can respond to the weather being bad differently. I got a battle buddy that, as a matter of fact, he's a SPPC in Fort Drum, and you cannot get him out of Fort Drum for anything. He will not leave that place. And I'm like, do you realize that it's
big army?
It's not just big army, but it's freezing in the wintertime. I don't care about big army, but I care about all that snow. People come down from Alaska to train in Fort Drum for cold weather training. It's insane. And you cannot get this guy out of there, right? So for me,
right,
you can give me a GS-15 job in Fort Drum and I will not take it. I'm good. Right. No, not my thing, right? So again, different people, right, respond to things differently. And we have to do a better job of taking the time to not look at all soldiers, all sailors, all civilians, all airmen, all family members. That's too inclusive. Take the time when someone comes to you with a problem, when you notice someone kind of struggling through something, take the time and listen to understand so that you can provide the appropriate resource. Sometimes the resource is going to be taking them to, you know, the behavioral health clinic or taking them to a counselor. Other times it's going to be taking my friend to a movie. Or to dinner, or to play basketball, or you need help in the gym, let's go to the gym. We got to do a better job of just listening to understand and then take accountability and responsibility for each other as human beings, man, and take care of one another.
Like you said about listening to understand, but listening starts with someone being open about the things that they're struggling with. In the larger just general community, but especially in the military population, there's a lot of shame that comes with talking about your mental health because you're afraid of the consequences. So what are some things that people can do to break that stigma, to have people be open with them or to open up themselves?
That's a long answer. I just want to tell you, right? There's different ways of approaching it. I'm going to try to concise it. This is part of our training too, right? We have a module on fighting stigma in which you got three different ways that you can fight stigma. One, you can challenge it. When you see somebody saying something that is inaccurate, for example, the big one here is if you go to behavioral health, you're going to lose your security clearance. That's a lie. So you challenge that. When you hear that, it's okay for you to say, that's not how it works. It's not that simple. Sometimes going to behavioral health is going to help you keep your clearance. So you challenge it. Another way is to educate. You educate yourself on whatever stigmas are associated with your environment. If in your shop, the stigma, going back to what I just said. Matter of fact, when I first got here, I had to educate myself on what actually happens when you go to behavioral health and you have a top secret clearance, which impacts almost all of our service members here, right? And civilians. And I knew that, in a nutshell, they cannot use your behavioral health. You know, I used to be a behavioral health specialist in the Army, so I know that they cannot use that information to take away or help you maintain your clearance unless what you're disclosing is something that is going to impact national security, right? If you're talking about killing someone or you're hearing voices and you're seeing hallucinations and you're a pilot, you probably should not be flying planes, right? But other than that, it's not going to impact you. I did not know in detail that what that looked like. So I had to educate myself and reach out to the folks that actually grant clearances and invite them to one of my table talks to explain to leaders what it actually looks like, to the correlation between clearances and behavioral health. So I educated myself. So educate yourself on things and then educate your peers, educate your subordinates, you know, into that topic. That's a way of challenging stigma.
So the old saying used to be, you know, suicide is a permanent solution to a temporary problem.
Correct.
Losing a security clearance is a big deal.
Huge.
For a career, but it's not the rest of your life. How or what do you do to persuade or educate service members, family members, that short term, as devastating as it might be short term, a divorce, anything like that, it might be that it is not permanent. It is not your whole life. So don't take your life just to address that short-term issue.
When it comes to the clearance itself, understand this. If, for example, and we keep talking about divorce, man, I don't want to focus on that too much, but let's say you're going through a financial problem. You're having a hard time paying your bills, and that is stressing you out. And you start recognizing that you're not sleeping at night, you're not really hungry anymore. You see that you're changing because of this problem. And you try to get a handle of it on your own with your friends, your circle, and you just can't. In that moment, you and your clearance should go get help. When you recognize that the problem is too big for you to handle, go get help. Because if you don't, eventually what could potentially happen is that because you are losing sleep, now you're messing up at the job. You're not eating, now you are irritable, angry, and you're snapping at your boss. So you start making bad decisions based on your inability to handle and cope and deal with this one problem, and you're, you know, whether it's because of stigma or whatever else, you refuse to go get help to address those issues. You allow this small issue to become a big life problem for you. And eventually, right, you mess up enough inside, you know, NSA building, for example, and chances are you're putting your security clearance at risk. But when you recognize that, hey, man, I need help with this, this might be a little bit too much for you. Having that understanding that help-seeking behavior is important for you, being able to say, I need help, and then going to get that help is going to keep you from getting to that point.
But losing your security clearance, and I was thinking, came up in sports like with Tua and his concussions. And do you retire or do you keep playing?
Right.
You don't play football, your life's not over. You lose your security clearance. It's devastating right now, but 5 years from now, you don't know.
That's life perspective too, right?
Right.
One, we have to do a better job of diversifying our portfolios, our emotional portfolios. You know, yeah, security clearance is important, but it's not the end of the world. I also don't want to minimize how important it is, because for some people, that's financial security, which also means, you know, they can provide for their families and it can impact relationships, all kind of stuff. So I don't want to minimize it, but it's important for us to, in those moments where we cannot see the light ourselves because we're so caught up in I lost my clearance, I feel like dying because of it, that we have people around us that are going to remind us of why we need to be here. That's why it's so important for us to build communities and circles of support that are able to recognize our greatness even when we don't see it ourselves.
I appreciate
you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What resources can people access when they realize that they need help, whether it's Fort Meade or any national resources that people can use?
Yeah, so for service members, you have our behavioral health clinics, you have Military One Source as resources that they can access and get help automatically. For our civilian population and for our family members and anybody in the whole country, actually, you know, they can reach out to 988. 988 is the new number to the suicide prevention hotline. I sit in a few panels and a few boards with veterans in the community, the Maryland community, men that have used the line, and they give it credit. When the room gets dark, when the candles go out, when the stars dim, and they have no one to turn to, they got to call that number. They say, you know, that the person on the other end of the line, man, has been more than valuable in reminding them to keep going. I just did a panel a couple of weeks ago with a Vietnam veteran, a gunnery sergeant. He said, you know, it's very hard for him, old school military, Marine, hoorah, jarhead type guy, right, to admit that he needs help. To his children, to his wife, to his battle buddies, he just don't want to talk about it. So it was easy to talk to a stranger about it. So he called 988. Even a couple of weeks later after the conversation, they sent him like a little care card. They say it made him feel seen and acknowledged and supported. So 988, man, is one of those services that I will always advocate for, because when everything else fails, and you can call or text that number, you can even chat online if you need to. When all else fails, man, and you don't want to bother people, you feel so engulfed in your own demons and your own stuff that you don't want to talk to anyone, call that number, text that number, man. Let someone just see you for a minute and bring you out of that darkness. Because you're right, Chad, suicide is a permanent solution to a temporary problem. And not only that, man, but suicide also doesn't fix the problem. It hands it over to the people you love the most. As soon as you die, man, that problem becomes somebody else's. And not only that, but it's intensified. So imagine what it will do to the people around you, your children, your parents, your friends, your neighbors, your coworkers, your battle buddies, man. Like anybody you love, the more you love them, the more impactful it's going to be for them. And that's all you're doing is giving the problem to them. And that's what you want to avoid this whole time. You're not even talking to them.
In regards to resources, I'd be remiss. We both spend time with the Fort Meade Alliance. So we got the resiliency kiosk throughout the installation. We got Coon Hall, the MFLEC, and the folks who support out there that I know does a lot. So as we get ready to wrap up, this is not a 1 month a year job for you. This is a full-time year. But are there anything that you would like to, that you don't think that we've gotten out yet, that you would like to share with our community?
I would like to remind people of the power that they have in preventing suicide. This is not training. This is not a task. This is just an ability that we have as human beings to show up for each other. You know, I always talk about Wilson from the movie Castaway as an example of how we have a primal need for connectedness. We have a primal need to have someone in our lives that we can talk to, that we can lean on, that we can laugh with, that we can celebrate with, that we can cry to, that can sit in space and hold space for us when times are going tough. And you don't need a training for that. You know what I'm saying? All you got to do is be able to show up for someone, acknowledge them, make them feel seen, a whole space for them, and support them through whatever they're going through without putting yourself in the dark, right? So if it's something that's too intense, make sure that you get them to the help they need. Don't try to sit with that problem yourself, because now you got two folks in the dark, right? But you do have power here. You do have a role that you play in everyone around you, man. So show up to people. When you ask someone how they're doing, how's your day going, like, mean it. Don't just ask that question and keep it moving. Just sit, just for 1 second, acknowledge people. It does not take much for us to acknowledge each other, to support each other, and to be there for each other. So I would like for people to remember the power that they have within. Think of themselves as a bunch of little Wilson volleyballs, man, and just be there and hold space for other people as they need it.
Bunch of little Wilsons.
Or big Wilsons, whatever, man.
Yep. That would be cosplay, no?
Yes.
Yeah, so the EC, I had
so,
to bring
so it. I'm going to say this, man. If you guys come to the panel on the 26th, I got a big surprise involving Wilson for y'all. So.
All right, September 26th. Well, Miguel, as always, it's a pleasure. You have a unique ability to talk about hard subjects in a way that we can understand. You're an absolute asset to our community. I look forward to the events coming out. Thank you all for tuning into this latest episode of Declassified. Abigail, first time. Well done. You and Glorianne will be back at it at the end of September, hopefully, as we get back on schedule. But thank you all. And remember to stay connected with Fort Meade on social media and the My Army Post app. We just hit 1,000 users. We can do much better, but 1,000 is good for the latest updates, and we'll catch you next time on Fort Meade Declassified. Life ain't gotta be hard.